Well, hello, everyone. I'm very pleased to have you back for this week's culture segment for another interview. And you know that here at The Boundless Show, we love to interview authors when we find them and they are writing about and speaking about great topics that apply to all of us. And this one is no exception. I have got Elizabeth Brown on the phone. Hi, Elizabeth.
How are you today?
I am doing pretty well, although you can tell from my voice I'm a little bit sick. But I knew that this was an important enough interview that we had to get it done. So here we are. You are the author of Working Successfully with Screwed Up People, which is what we're going to talk about today. And you're actually the author of a few books similar to this topic, as well as dealing with loss. I think you have one related to that as well. So we're just so pleased to have you here. And I think you're going to have a lot to share with our audience. We're excited about that. So let me just start by saying I really like the way that you kind of lead out the book by suggesting or really asserting that it only takes one person to change a relationship. And that's probably a little counterintuitive for some people. So I would love for you to kind of unpack that for us a little bit, Elizabeth, because as we apply this now to the workplace, I think that'll be interesting. So how can we change a relationship just by one person making the effort?
Well, literally, one person is all it takes to change a relationship, because if you change and you are no longer reacting the same way, the other person has to change what they do in order to get the response they want. Hmm. So especially when we're dealing in difficult situations, oftentimes we try to come back, and the person is getting just exactly what he wants. He's getting the response, and he's showing who has the power. Take that out of the equation, and you have so much more control in what you do.
Absolutely. Let's back up here for a minute and just talk about some things, because I know you have a lot of experience, not only yourself, but working with people who are in many different working situations. What would you say are some just good examples of things in the workplace that generally cause tension? I mean, obviously, if we all just worked on our own and made all the decisions and had our way every time, you wouldn't have had to write this book. But what would you say are some of the biggest friction causers?
Well, the first thing is that naturally, we think what we are doing is the right way. Mm-hmm. It's our natural response. If we think this, then that's the way it should be. And when we get into the workforce, many times you'll find only maybe one person in the whole company will think the way you do. And that's the success of a successful company, is that they have lots of different temperaments in there so that they can circle the wagons of all the business problems, so people look at everything from different viewpoints. So here you have the need for business to have all these different viewpoints, and the natural propensity of all of us to think that we've got the right answer. And you put those things together, and there is tension. Tension in lots of issues, just as simple as, what do you call your boss? Do you call him Mr. or do you call him Joe? Mm-hmm. That may not be difficult for a person who's 50 or 60 to figure out, but when you're 24 and entering the workforce, you don't know.
Sure. So one thing that I think is so fascinating, of course, you know, and everyone wrestles with this in some sense, you know, say, let's take a specific example of, you know, there's something that has cropped up at work, and it is, you see it as a source of, it's going to be a problem. How in the world do you determine from the get-go who the problem is? Is it you or is it them? Now, I know for me, Elizabeth, it's never me. It's always the other person, okay? So, but I mean, for the others out there that, you know, it may be maybe them. How can you determine in this situation whether or not you, in fact, are the source of the problem?
Well, you have to put your glasses on, literally. You have to look at the situation as if you're above it and looking down, and how hard that is. But it's crucial, because unfortunately or fortunately, the way we grow up is by learning to deal with all these differences. And you have to be able to see. Sometimes you're really working with someone who's telling you to do something that you know is just not going to be the right way. But if they have the power and they're in control, then it boils down to the fact of, you want this job or not. If you want it, you have to do it their way. And that can really be difficult if you're so sure you're right. So sometimes being quiet is the way to handle these situations and let it prove itself out. State what you think, what you believe to be the case, and then if it proves that the other case is wrong, you will have won a point. If you argue, though, you just put up barriers.
Right. So really, in thinking about this, it gets me to thinking about a biblical response to any kind of conflict. And it makes me wonder, you know, a lot of my friends that I talk to, they kind of wrestle with when do you have to, in the workplace, just let something go? Like, when is it something that maybe you're making too much of it? And it's really like, you know, okay, Lisa, simmer down, just let it go. It's not that big of a deal. Or when does it cross into just outright avoidance of an issue, something that doesn't, you know, that can't be avoided? How do you differentiate between those two?
Well, we all know what is right and what is wrong. If it's unethical, it's unethical. Someone's stealing, you can't just be quiet. You have to report that or you become an accomplice to it. Bottom line is, we all struggle with these issues, and we have to stand back, look at it carefully, appraise whether it's worth the battle. Some things, just like working with a young child, it's not worth the battle. And so save your precious times for confrontation to things that really will make a difference in the long run, really will make a difference.
Sure. Okay. What about a situation, Elizabeth, where you feel like it's not just between you and another person, but there's, or maybe the initial thing is with you and someone else, but you've maybe tried to bring it to them or to their boss, or you just feel like the situation in the workplace, the structure is broken. Like, I've had friends who've tried to address things that they knew were wrong, maybe with their supervisors, with their HR department, and it's gotten brushed under the rug, or it's gotten, and I think a lot of young adults have this feeling of powerlessness. Like, they're young, they're just being told what to do, and there really is, they feel powerless to effect change. Is there any recourse for them in that?
Well, they're dealing with reality. In any workplace, there is a structure, and the structure limits what you can and cannot do, and it takes time to build relationships that give you the opportunity to make a difference. If you're the bell ringer, if you're always looking at things and finding the problem with it and constantly in conflict, you'll not be heard. And so you have to pull yourself back out of that and look at it, and here again, it's still what you aren't powerless, but you are powerless in some ways until you develop enough relationship that people trust you. When a man goes into, or a woman goes into a new job, the first thing to do is nothing. Now, that is counter to what we as young people think. We think, you know, we've got all these skills, we've been hired for the job, so obviously we're needed, so they want our input. But until you get the trust factor in there, your input will be not of value. Once you begin to establish that you're reliable as a person and in a relationship, and those are things that take time, then your voice will be heard and not before.
Okay. So specifically then, I mean, that of course begs the question, what if that problem really is with your boss or your supervisor? You know, this is going to be the situation many in our audience are in, and they've just got really maybe a terrible boss, and there's no there's no way for them to get around that. What would be, you know, how can they change things when it's really the boss or supervisor who's causing the problem?
And oftentimes it is the boss or the supervisor, and you're feeling very controlled. So you need to get a reality check. Do you want the job? Is the job worth what you're having to put up with? You probably are not going to change the personality of the person. But this book addresses temperament. You must recognize what can change and what will never change. So if you look at the situation and you say, gee, this person calls for all morning conferences, and I'm a night person. You better figure out a way to get alert in the morning, and that may mean an extra Starbucks. And that's such a simple one, but it's not so simple when you have a boss who is a rule follower and you think these rules are just stupid. I mean, what company would be much more efficient without such rules and structure? So there's a chapter in the book about the company life. Companies have life ages just like people have life ages. And if you're in a company and you like to to be flexible and share your ideas, then you need to be in a company that's a startup company, not a company that's been in business forever. Because the longer a company has been in business, the more established rules there are. And recognizing the age of the company may help you recognize whether you're in the right environment for your personality, for the gifts that God has given to you.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's kind of another one of those things where it's hard to weigh, you know, what's the right decision? Because I think, you know, I often harp on young adults, the ones that are younger than I, in saying, you know, you need to get into a job and you need to know what it means to work hard and to kind of earn your stripes. I think some of our generation has lost that, you know, from the previous generations of they just want work to be fun. They want it to be easy. They want to create their own hours. And it's like, no, you know, your first job, you probably are going to be making some copies and getting coffee and whatever. So I think there's an element of that. But then, like you're saying, also look maybe ahead to how do your personality traits and your temperament and all that, how does that fit kind of where ultimately you want to fit in as a niche? Would you say that's a good way of kind of keeping a balance to that?
Absolutely. Or? Absolutely. Two of the strongest points of this book is the list of temperaments, the things in us that will never change. And when you see that, behavior is not that issue. It's not right, no matter what your temperament is, to misbehave, to be rude or bad. But at the same time, the way you look at the world is shaped by your temperament. So you need to understand that. You need to understand the life of the company so that you see whether this really is a fit. Am I the problem, or is it that I'm really in the wrong stage of this business's life? Those are the analytical things that require us to look at it so that we're not constantly thinking we're a failure. Maybe we're just not in the right niche.
Okay. So taking all of this into account, Elizabeth, you know, say a person really has tried to stick it out and they've tried to evaluate the temperaments around them. They've tried to deal with their own stress in the situation. They've really tried to maybe openly and biblically resolve a very real conflict that may be there. When can a person decide if really it is time for them to leave a job, and how can they come to that conclusion?
Well, there are times to leave a job. A lot of us feel like it's a failure to leave, but sometimes it's the courageous act to leave a job. When your job feels like work, you might want to be thinking about whether you're in the right place. And by saying that, there is no such thing as a perfect job. But you can stay in the worst kind of jobs if you know that what you're doing is making a difference. You can stay with total nerds of personality if you know that maybe what you're doing, you're being positive and optimistic and being encouraging to others, that you're there to make a difference in the whole culture of the business. So sometimes we go in thinking, you know, the business ought to make us feel good, when maybe we're where God put us because we can make the difference.
Mm-hmm. Would you say, speaking of making a difference, and I know you talk a little bit in the book about, you know, addressing just those general office politics, and that can run from, you know, gender wars to kind of the tenor of the office and kind of how people talk, the water cooler talk. For a believer in the workplace, how should a believer know what to put up with? Because, you know, some will say, oh, you're a light there. You need to stick it out. You need to be a witness. You need to, and other people will say, you know, this is probably isn't very healthy and you probably need to get out of there. What's a good way to manage that?
Well, those are the iffy questions, aren't they? Wouldn't mm-hmm. we like to live in a world where everybody was perfect and we could share our faith openly? But the best way to share faith is by your actions. If you're caring and forgiving and don't hold grudges and don't become part of the gossip chain, if you say positive things, you will share your faith because people will begin to look to you. They'll see you as someone that they don't label as a backstabber, as somebody who's just in it for themselves. And that's the real expression of faith. So the best way to share at work is to live it. It speaks louder than words. No one wants to work with someone who's preaching or constantly complaining, but it's a rare bird who doesn't appreciate someone who's slow to anger, who's caring, appreciative, responsible. All of those things say that I believe in you, you're going to do well, and we're in here as a team.
Well, that's great. Elizabeth, any other advice for young adults, especially those 20-somethings, early 30-somethings who are trying to navigate the workplace that you've gleaned from your own experience?
Well, I will say this, that people need to relax. In this generation, it's not going to be unusual for each of them to have three different careers, not jobs, careers. So don't get too uptight about where you are. See what you can do, what you can learn, how you can enjoy it, and what you can share of you with the company. You're going to carry that into the next job or the next job with you. All those things will compile, and as you go along, if you've made good relationships, you'll find that network builds and creates the impetus for the next positions you might hold or the next opportunities. So sometimes it's seeing our difficult workplace opportunity as opposed to terrible challenge.
Sure. And I guess that's true, because as I think of it now, I'm kind of in my third career, and I really see those first two as having given me some great experience and different experience that built into what I'm doing now. And, you know, I never would have thought 15 years ago that I'd be doing what I'm doing now, you know, never would have predicted it. But I see how those building blocks really contributed to that. So that's good wisdom. So, well, Elizabeth, thank you so much for weighing in on this. Again, everyone, she is the author of Working Successfully with Screwed Up People, and that's what we've been talking about today. Thank you so much, Elizabeth, for your time, and we will let folks know how to, you know, the information on how to get the book. There's more in here that we didn't even touch, so a great, really, primer for people to get into this and understand how to navigate where they work, because that's a big chunk of our days. I think people underestimate, you know, how much time we spend at work and the impact that it can have on us and on others. So thank you so much.
Oh, Ed, wonderful to be with you. Have a great day.